Welcome to the latest episode of the Informing Choices Minipod. In our rapidly changing world, the way we package goods has become a critical aspect of our environmental footprint. The burgeoning field of sustainable packaging is not just a trend, but a necessity. In this episode of the podcast, we will try to unwrap the layers of innovation and transformative change we can anticipate in the next few decades, from the potential of innovative packaging systems, pioneering materials, to the impact of technological advancements like nanotechnology and smart packaging. But it's not just about the materials. What about the systematic changes, how businesses, consumers, and regulations could adapt to and drive the demand for sustainable packaging? To explore this landscape, I'm delighted to extend a warm welcome to the podcast to two guests with a passion for sustainable packaging and the environment from specialty consultancy Root. Root's mission is to change the mindset of the packaging and consumer goods industries by championing a responsible, regenerative future for leading producers of goods and packaging. With me today, our lead consultant and founder, Tracy Sutton, and policy and impact lead, Hannah Worthington. Tracy, Hannah, welcome to the podcast.
Good morning, Steve. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well, Tracy. Let's start with stories from the future, because one of the things I've been trying to do on this series of the podcast is help people think about a much longer term future. And from there, we can step back and think about the changes that we need to make now. So let's think about and describe a life in 2050, where as a society, we've effectively resolved the challenge of producing and using environmental damaging packaging materials. What does that look like?
And I thank you for raising this question, because I think it's a really important question to ask. And I don't think that we really project into the future far enough. I also am really pleased to have Hannah here, who's pretty much half my age. So having a lot younger and their perspectives to answer this question, as opposed to people who are really in the thick of it and who've been doing this work for, sadly for me, probably about two to three decades. For me, the future really is quite revolving, or should really be evolving, around systems. So systems whereby we've got these local sort of hubs where we hire or we lease things, sort of in the same way that we've been starting to, that we've been doing with a number of other community things like automotive sector as well. I like this whole concept really around simplicity for us. So we've got quite a design thinking approach. So the idea that we've got simple systems, local systems, and solutions where we're doing these hiring and leasings, as opposed to currently what we've got with lots of single-use packaging, is that and you will have heard these phrases before when we think about the circular economy, is that we've got these linear systems. So one of the biggest challenges that we have is that we've got lots of linear, entire industries and businesses and countries, and the most of the world is set up to profit and work with single-use packaging in a very degenerative way. So the idea that we've got these more circular systems whereby we're collecting and cleaning and redistributing reusable or refillable packaging, that's where we need to get to, without a doubt. And rather than over-engineering things, so the technical aspect is definitely something that's critical, but making sure that we're not over-engineering materials and focusing too much on innovative materials, but on innovating in the system.
Yeah.
And this whole overarching thing that we use less. So our strapline is helping brands to do more with less. So the whole idea that we're using less resources, that comes with less risk, less impact through the entire life cycle. So really making sure that it's about systems, simplicity, and using less.
So what would that look and feel like to a consumer in 2050? You know, what will I be doing different when I wander into a supermarket, if I'm still wandering into a supermarket in 2050? How will I look back 30 years ago and recognize the difference?
So, for example, this is whether you shop online or in person, the idea that there'll be this set of standards when you go into the retail store. So we work with single use standards at the moment, and in the future we'll be hopefully having sets of, for example, if there'll be a 50ml skincare cream, there'll be a 200ml shampoo bottle, or maybe we'll have solid products as well, rather than ones that ship lots of water. We'll have a 250 ml reusable beverage bottle. One might be for carbonated drinks, and we'll have essentially a set of standards for key items that we use within the household and also on the go as well. So we've got these different environments that we'll shift between, and recognizing that things that we our user needs when we're on the go are going to be different if we're literally going, if we're taking, whether it's a an Amazon or a Tesco or whatever other retailers available, and get delivered on your doorstep. And rather than that packaging being taken in and then us disposing is of it in our recycling, we will be collecting and reusing, or maybe washing out and then putting back on, whether it's the doorstep or taking it back to the retailer. So some of these systems are beginning to be visible and being used and piloted and trialed. Our next step is about scale.
What's quite interesting about that reuse thing is that I'm old enough to remember when actually you took your lemonade bottles back to the shop because there was a deposit on them and they were reused. So I don't really like to use the phrase, but it feels a little bit part of that is sort of back to the future, isn't it, almost?
It totally is. And you see, it's so easy for us to get tempted by this whole thing of innovation. And actually, how we've interpreted innovation, how we've interpreted the circular economy over the last, 10 or 20 years has been in the wrong direction at a very big global level. So it's very critical that we make this much needed vital shift towards using less materials and using them more responsibly. And often, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Not a technical term, but sometimes we will try and reinvent the wheel when we don't need to.
Hannah, what's your perspective? What do you think some of these things in 2050 might be like? How might they be affecting our lives?
So I think I hope for a very similar thing to Tracy. I'm a big advocate for reuse and using things for longer. But I think one message that I hope to see in 2050 is one that I've taken from the waste management industry, of this idea of nothing becomes waste. It's just another valuable resource that we use for another purpose. Everything can be reused and has a second life, and innovation should be focusing on reusing more materials in more innovative ways so we can find ways to save things from landfill and energy from waste. And I think, based on what Tracy said about having a set of standard packaging formats, this idea of pride in reusing things and using things for longer, thinking to the change we've seen in the textiles industry and with clothing, people using vintage clothing. I think the idea of having a, your one water bottle for your whole life, or one piece of packaging that's a cherished part of who you are and a representative of your belief system, I think that's a really interesting concept, and how we can creatively innovate and repair things so they become better than even before. I want to see that in 2050.
One of the things I'm particularly noticing, you're clearly both singing from the same hymn sheet when you talk about innovation, because quite often when we use the word innovation, people immediately go to, oh, here's a really cool new technology. But actually, innovation is as much about changing behavior, changing systems, changing process, isn't it?
I think in our industry, innovation is something that it depends on what part of the value chain you stand in. So if you ask a waste manager about innovative materials, they might go, oh no, how are we going to manage this? And if you ask a pack tech about innovative materials, they'll be coming up with things made of mushrooms, multi-material, non-recyclable, whatever magical material it is this week. Yeah, so I think behavior change is also an interesting one. In the current single-use world, we see things as when we finish with it, we put it in the bin. We don't think of where it goes to next. That's where the waste managers pick it up and have to handle whatever is being produced, whether it's recyclable or not. And I think innovation in being more mindful of what we do with the things that we buy, and choosing to buy innovative materials that can be used for longer, is a consumer change that we're waiting to see at scale.
I might add to that as well, Steve, which we often talk about innovating in materials, products, and systems. So we tend to habitually innovate down here while we're implementing. So the product's been developed. So, your 200 ml shampoo in a liquid, we need to get a 200 ml PET bottle. There's not much innovation there, I'm afraid. So if we take a step back and we look at how can we innovate in the product, and so therefore, if you turned your product into a shampoo, we know that in terms of the user experience, there's pros and cons of that. If you change the format of the product, it then opens up more opportunities. So you've got to innovate across the two. And then further back, where we have the big barriers, it's innovating in the system. And that often means innovating in the business model, which hopefully we'll chat a little bit about today.
I suppose one of the other things that strikes me as well, this is it feels a little bit sort of carrot and sticky, I suppose, in that we are starting to see behaviour change from, and normally I hate to generalise, but then immediately I say that I do. So typically younger generations are probably buying things based more on the sustainability credentials of the brand that they're looking to buy from. So there's kind of a behavioural change there, which is more kind of carrot led. But at the other end, I guess there's a requirement for a stick as well. So what sort of regulations do you imagine could emerge in and around 2050 that actually really focus on designing products that allow a more sustainable packaging to go around them when they're actually sold?
So I might give a little bit of context and then hand over to Hannah, because she drives a lot of the regulatory work for us. For me, a lot of the themes reflect what's going on at a national and an EU level, for sure, around eco-design requirements. Mm. And eco-design requirements tend to be a little bit stuck often between packaging design and product design. So when does a single-use pack and the regulation that accommodates that or mandates that, when does that start applying to a product? Because you use a product, you know, many products you may use every day, reusable water bottle, the whole design brief needs to be really different. It's all about durability, longevity, and making sure that that can also be recycled. Whereas the regulation around single use tends to be about making it less bad at the end of the day. So it's really making sure that we think about having the right design regulation. That's definitely one of the themes. And then I'll pass on to Hannah to talk a little bit more about
that. Yeah, so I think regulation in 2050 will look quite different to today, because I'm hoping the problems that regulation today is trying to solve will have solved them by then. The critical one that's upcoming is the packaging and packaging waste regulation in the EU. Most of those targets are set the furthest in the future would be 2040. So by 2050, we'll have had 10 years of that, fingers crossed. So I think regulation in 2050 will be developed in a better way. I think that will be the critical difference, because we don't know what the full set of challenges will be. Hopefully, the circular economy will be much more developed. And the challenges that regulation will be designed to fix in 2050 will be ones that are industry-led. So today we have extended producer responsibility, which is based on the polluter pays principle. I can't do my piece. The polluter pays principle, where industry is being charged with the task of taking control of the waste management costs of the packaging they produce. And as a result, they're thinking more responsibly about the packaging that they produce. And I think a similar concept will be available in 2050, where regulation is designed to bring industry along and spread the responsibility across the value chain and close these loopholes that we're seeing in packaging regulation today, where you can use something that is still not the best for the environment or socially or whatever the metric is on a technicality. And I think regulation in 2050 will hopefully be designed to prioritize people and planet over short-term profits and focus more on long-term sustainability of the environment, but also profitable businesses, because doing what's good for the here and now, if you don't have a business model in 10 years' time, is perhaps not the best way for a government to run things.
Yeah, I really like that point of, as a futurist, you know, for thinking right now about the things we might need to change for a better future. And it's now we have to do that thinking. So having thought about, you know, what the world might be like in 2050 and what some of those kind of enablers might be, and I guess to some extent we've started to touch on this, but what are the things that we need to start changing now? And when I was thinking about this question, I thought, well, actually, these will be things about social or behavioural issues for how consumers behave in retail, how the hospitality sector changes. Technological, how we might consider using automation technologies like AI to help us think about supply chains and product development and so on with a little bit more effectiveness. The economic factors, because I guess some of the things that you're talking about, at least in the early stages to kick them off, They're quite a significant investment. So we've got to have trust in the future economy that actually we can continue to afford them, or put things in place that allow everyone to afford these innovations. And I guess that then overlaps with both environmental and political and regulatory changes. So, you know, you're welcome to go anywhere you like across that array of factors. What are the things you think that we need to be changing now to enable that vision in 2050?
So I might build on the topic of regulation and connect that to the economic, because I think they're two critical drivers for most businesses today. And this theme of resource use, so many regions and nations are looking at actually how they can protect the resources that they produce, the resources that they import as well, and so that they use those resources more responsibly. So we've got more regulation coming in really at that very high level that then impacts and filters down into packaging regulation. So how we're using resources, and really that goes back to my point around using less. And we've also got things like critical raw materials. So how we're using particular materials, some of them used for packaging, some of them used for a whole load of other materials, but making sure that we keep the value of those materials in our within our hands, essentially, because often the business models mean that we lose that value. So I'm a producer, I buy in my oats, I buy in my cardboard, I box them up and together, and then I distribute them out. I've lost the value of that, whereas actually I could own the cardboard, that could be my asset to own. And so business models that look to tie together ownership of those assets and also responsibility of the assets, I think, is really important. So the extended producer responsibility regulation that Hannah was talking about, really one of the principles around that is shifting the responsibility onto the producer, onto the brand, to take responsibility for the waste that they're creating. So there's a lot of the economic or the fiscal mechanisms within regulation are looking to bind those two topics around resource use and regulation together, so resource use and value together. I think the other thing for me that comes under the economic aspect is one of the big challenges we have, and I mentioned it earlier, is when most businesses interpret the circular economy into their business model is set up to profit from single use, disposability, disposable business models. And so often what you'll see is they'll put a bit of recycled content in something, they'll make sure it's recyclable, those tasks in itself can really be very significant, but they're incremental and they don't get to the root, which is why we call the business root. They don't get to the root cause of what the problem is, which is that the business model was designed for single use. The economic model was designed to profit from single use. And so where we're sort of stuck in most instances when we come to that interpretation of circular economy is where businesses are going, oh, let's just make this piece of single use packaging that we buy, produce, distribute less bad. Let's make sure it complies. It's sort of a short-term, a compliance-only lens, and let's make sure that we are ticking those regulatory boxes. But the challenge is that doesn't future-proof against regulatory or reputational risk in the future, also all commercial risk. So really making sure that the economics are thought about is important. So business as usual for most businesses is very much in disposability. So then if we think about leasing and hiring models, how can those businesses shift to being profitable when they are using less packaging kind of year on year, so that if you shift from a single use model into a reusable model, you'll be placing less tons of packaging on the market. You'll be paying for less tons of packaging. You'll also be exposed to less risk. The crux, which most people haven't cracked, is how to shift the commercials and make it commercially viable. That is definitely where a lot of businesses are stuck. So that's something, the final point on the economics really is around the financial system, that these fiscal mechanisms that governments are using, so plastics tax we've got, other things like extended producer responsibility. There's a whole raft of taxes, fees, fines, levies that businesses designed to create pots of money so that they can invest in different areas, or to redistribute for, you know, the increase of collection and recycling infrastructure. The challenges is that, and also things like how the business governments get money back in terms of VAT and tax. So those models are all set up for single use. Those models need to be able to channel finances, money back to government, so that there is a benefit to the government as well, over and above just the businesses, because the businesses are only going to change to adapt to what the governments are asking for. And if the governments are asking for, and their financial models are set up for single use profitability or to gain money, that's a, you know, it's a big ask, but that's where it comes back to for the economics.
I find the economics argument is really, really interesting, because you could put a strong argument together that says the future economic model has to change from one that we see right now, because, you know, how do you get people and businesses to respond more sustainably to the issues that you've been talking about? What do you do when perhaps there are fewer jobs because of the result of automation? You know, the whole premise on which current economic models are built might not be in existence by 2050, which I think is a really interesting notion and the topic for a whole other podcast series. Hannah, what's your perspective on some of these on some of these issues that I spoke about?
I think, actually, just touching back on a point you just made there about jobs not existing, I think it's more going to be, they'll be different. Our waste management and senior policy, Sarah Jane Widdowson, does a lot of work around green skills for the future, especially in the waste management industry. Because we see that there will be a big change in what's needed. And I think linking to your initial question about what that will look like in terms of environmental as well, there's this idea of a mindset shift of not creating any new damage. And as a result, new jobs will be needed, because we have to clean up the waste that is already there. Things like there's the Ocean Cleanup Project and a whole other bunch of great initiatives around the world capturing plastic from rivers and oceans, etc. But there's the question around chemicals. A lot of the regulatory stuff that we're looking at now is things like PFAS. And how on earth do you start to clean up persistent organic pollutant chemicals when they're found all over the world, in, you know, from the Arctic to Antarctica? There's this going to be a huge industry and hopefully societal view around cleaning up the damage that has been done already. Even now, if I go into my garden and I start digging, I can find plastic wrappers in the soil in my flower beds just because of litter. So I think that is a link between the environment and the economic aspect in the maybe mid to long term, where by 2050 there'll be an industry around making things better.
Yeah, and I might add to that as well, which is the purpose of the waste management industry to some extent, some may argue this really, but it's to collect, clean and reprocess the primarily in the packaging world, the single-use packaging that we produce, create the waste we create, and to manage those resources in a responsible way. Whereas actually in the future, the idea is, and we've started to see some of this at a small scale where we've got these hubs, and these pilots and these schemes, and some of the pilots are getting bigger and bigger, which is great, but whereby it's, rather than the collection and reprocessing of single-use waste packaging, it's the collection and the cleaning and the redistributing of reusable or refillable packaging. So the infrastructure in the future is going to be in places different than it is today. And I'd love to see a place whereby reusable packaging is the norm, and the single-use packaging. There's all, we talk, when we talk about a packaging strategy, there, every material and pack format's got a role. So if we think of, there are some instances in pharmaceutical and medical sectors whereby using single-use plastic, there is a very valid argument for doing that when you're talking about saving lives. Many instances you can still do that being reusable, as we've done for a very long time. But actually, it doesn't make sense to use, does it make sense to use single-use plastic for the convenience of the majority of the people in the world? And probably not. So it's really making sure that we're very strategic about how we use materials rather than just continuing to use them in this linear way.
And I mean, one area that I'm, despite what I've said earlier on about technology, how easy it is to jump on the kind of technology use innovation, I'm also curious about how you see the role of technologies like AI in product design, product life cycle design, perhaps how AI handles the monitoring of polluting organizations, and the potential of new materials to play a role in that, whether it's new materials themselves, or new production processes like using 3D printing, for example, because we know 3D printing can be used for a whole manner with a whole manner of different materials, not just plastics. And even 4D printing, where actually what we're doing is 3D printing materials that can change their properties. So perhaps you have packaging materials that can change their shape based upon what they're supposed to be packaging inside. How do you see some of those starting to emerge in the future?
Yeah, so I think the technological for me is more around the implementation than the strategy. So we tend to think a lot of our work focuses more so on the strategy, but bearing in mind and having a pretty good understanding of what's going on at the technical level. You'll know like I do, 3D printing's been out there for a long time, but it's not used. Clearly, it's not used at scale because of the whole purpose of it, but it's not really used when it comes to packaging. It's used more so in the prototyping and the development process for many products and packaging, but more so in things like furniture and in product design, I would say. In the packaging side of things, it tends to be more so around the prototyping. AI, I think, is a really interesting one. Where Hannah's now the judge on some awards in Europe, whereby last year that one of the award winners was AI in recycling technology, to be brief. And there's definitely two areas where AI is being used. So it's being used to improve recycling in terms of sorting software automations, essentially. So making things a lot more slick and straightforward. And it's also being used, so that's in our mind, that's about making single use less bad. It's also being used to track and tell the story of packaging and look at and manage stock and supply chain efficiencies for single use and reusable packaging. So particularly important for you could argue it's as important for single use packaging as it is for reusable packaging, but really understanding where resources go, where packaging goes, making sure that we're aware of whether it stays local or whether it goes, is it exported, is it imported. So AI is being quite valuable to help share the story so that we can continue to learn. So that will help a business or a brand understand who's using my reusable packaging. How many times are they using it? Are they using it within the home? Are we using it via a distributor? So really, a really valuable tool for mapping a lot of those logistics. But I think, yeah, so it's used in those two areas. The crux for me is making sure. So if we invest in AI in recycling, but I would much rather the AI and the investments in the technical and the innovation side of things to be used in helping us use less, as opposed to helping us continue to use lots and use it in a very degenerative way.
Who knows, by 2050, perhaps we'll be so well surveilled that actually what happens is our taxes go up the more plastics we use.
Well, yeah, there's a. I was trying to remember the phrase that someone's talked to me about a convenience tax. So. Essentially, if you have the luxury of being able to buy a lot of these products that have got very high impact, so we think about many things in the luxury sector, then you can probably earn it, you can probably afford a few more bob to be making sure that you're covering up for the collection and the repair and the refurbishment as well, because a lot of these things are about repair, refurbishment, upgrades, as opposed to just collection and recycling.
Tracy, Hannah, I think that's been absolutely brilliant. We spoke a lot earlier on about what some of the things we might expect to see in 2050, how they might change. And I think we've really nicely picked up the kind of the social, technological, economic, environmental, political, and regulatory factors that perhaps we need to think about now in order to create a much more sustainable world as far as packaging materials go. So thank you so much indeed for your time.
Thank you, Hannah and Tracy, for your insights and time today. That was absolutely brilliant. There's more information about Root in the podcast description, and Root are currently offering a free half-hour advisory call, so do look at that. And thank you, everyone, for listening and watching.
Do tell your friends and colleagues about the Informing Choices mini pod, and there'll be another episode along very soon.